Okay, hi everybody. So I'd like to report some new stuff regarding quantum computation graphs and statistical mechanics. So I recently moved institutions, but the work of mainly done in Innsbruck with some of the usual suspects, I guess, Wolfgang Friedrich, Alberigo. Also Robert Dassler was involved. And the last two are two PhD students in Innsbruck, Gemma de las Cuevas and Robert Zuber. Okay, so let's just dive into it. So what are we trying to do? So what am I trying to sell you? So we're interested in connections between quantum information theory and statistical mechanics. Why are we interested in these things? Well, if you look at recent papers, it turns out that there are some nice connections between these two fields which can be made. I'm listing some of them, but the best thing to do would just be to look around you, because many people will talk about these things in the workshop, and I don't have space to list them all, so I'll just list those who are not here, I guess. So for example, the whole matrix product states and PEPS formalism is teaching us things about condensed matter, ground state approximation, and so on, via techniques from quantum information theory. Other stuff involves, for example, quantum algorithms for an approximation of the Potts-Marvel partition function, worked by Aronoff. Other connections involve looking at the toric code states, trying to do measure-based quantum computation with these states, and then it turns out that there are interesting connections to the classical easing model, you know, and there are many other things. Okay, so, well, I find these things all quite interesting for many reasons, I guess. So the first would be that just on a conceptual level, trying to connect, you know, aspects of completely different fields is, well, I find this typically a nice thing just for the hell of it. But other than this, what these things lead to is often the reformulation of certain difficult problems into another language, which may then be used to transform problems which seem difficult or intractable into one language, into another language where these things become, you know, solvable. So they allow, these mappings allow the interchanging between techniques and tools from different fields, which is the reason why I would like to study them. So what are we trying to do specifically is to try to come up with these connections, which may hopefully teach us something about computational aspects in quantum computation. So we would like to get some hopefully simple mappings between quantum computation and statistical mechanics, which teach us something about, for example, the classical simulation of quantum computation, the construction of simulatable gate sets, construction of simulatable resource states for measure-based quantum computation, and so on. Oh yeah, by the way, I'm using here this word, which you might not know, but so people talk about simulable and simulatable, and doesn't make much sense to me. I don't know which is the correct one. So this is the Dutch version. So I'm trying it out now. By the end of the talk, you may tell me whether you like it or not. Okay. Simuleerbaar.
Simuleerbaar.
Sounds much easier.
Yes. Germans like it. I think so too. So next to classical simulation, it might be very good if we could have some systematic way of constructing new quantum algorithms for statistical mechanics problems, similar to the Potts model stuff, but hopefully a bit more general. So this is another hope. And then, of course, a bit next to these things, if you're talking about computational aspects, you may also want to learn something just from a classical point of view about the complexity of these statistical mechanics problems themselves, right? So some problems are tractable, some are NP-hard. Maybe with such connections, you may learn something about these things in the classical world. So for some of these objectives, I will be able to say something. For some of them, I will not. So you just have to wait and see. So the structure of the talk, I will present some mappings relating quantum computation to these statistical mechanics problems. There will be three of them. One related to the circuit model, one related to teleportation-based quantum computation, and one related to one-way quantum computation. So covering somehow three of the major models in which you can do quantum computation. And then present some applications which are related to the objectives I just had in mind. Okay. So now I go to the actual contents of the talk. And I guess I must say here before really starting that a lot of the things which I will say are in fact very simple. So the mappings which I'm given, yeah, they're almost trivial, I guess. It doesn't have to do much to get them, but I will present them anyway, because I think you can get a lot of mileage out of them. So with some simple insights, I think one can already learn a lot. So please don't come after the talk to me and say the whole thing was trivial, because I will say, okay, I know. So. Okay. So the first mapping involves quantum circuits. So what is the setup? We're looking at a quantum circuit drawn in this way. So these horizontal lines here, they are qubit lines, and the white boxes are gates. So for simplicity, I only draw boxes which act on two qubit gates, but every such box can either be a two qubit gate or just a single qubit gate acting on one of the lines, or basically the identity which does nothing at all. But I'm representing it here in this somehow translation invariant way for reasons which will become clear later. And basically, the only restriction I'm having is that I'm taking gates from some elementary gate set, let's say S, and I only allow the action of two qubit gates on nearest neighbor qubits. And then I ask the question, if I have such a setup, if I can make circuits like this, which of these circuits can I simulate classically? Okay. So for which gate sets can I simulate these gates, these circuits classically? And also I have to specify what I mean with classical simulation, and I will be somehow restricted and just care about such matrix elements. So C is the whole circuit. X and Y are some computational basis states, and I'm just asking, okay, what is the computational difficulty of computing these matrix elements? Okay. If I can do this efficiently classically, I will say that the gates are simulatable, but of course one can ask much more than this, but for now I won't. Okay. So what I'll now do is rewrite this matrix element in some form which is connected to statistical mechanics. To do this, I will use fairly standard technique. So this circuit here is, it's a big unitary, which is given by the product of a bunch of small gates, right? So this whole quantity is a number which is obtained by the contraction of a whole bunch of small tensors. And there exist standard organized ways of writing down such such tensor contractions, which go as follows. So if this is here a two qubit gate, right, such a white box with four edges, so these you have two incoming indices, two outgoing indices, and then one simply replaces this white box by a vertex, okay? And if you then have in your circuit the product of two of these gates, something like this, this means that you're contracting these two tensors at some index, and the corresponding graphical representation will be that you take the two vertices with four edges attached to them, and you identify two of these edges. So this index alpha here, which is contracted over, is this line, corresponds to gluing together this part and this part of this edge. Okay, so this is all fairly standard. And then you should do this for the whole circuit. And since we've chosen the structure of the circuit to be of a certain translation invariant form, what you get here is a big 2D lattice in some kind of tilted way. So every node here corresponds to an elementary gate. And on the edges are sitting these indices. So how do you get this whole matrix element? Well, you get it by looking at a big sum. So this here is a big sum where you sum over all possible somehow configurations of the indices on the edges, right? So on every edge lives an index, or if you will, a classical spin. It is a variable which has a finite number of values. So if you have a 2-qubit gate, then this is a line acting on 1 qubit. So this variable A can be 0 or 1, for example. And this is true for every edge in the lattice. So the first thing you do is you take a big sum over all possible spin configurations on the lattice. And every term in the sum is then a product. Is there So the sum is over all configurations of the edges, and each term is a product over all vertices of these matrix elements of the individual gates. Okay, so that's what you get. And this is now basically, this is the connection with statistical mechanics, because such a thing, situation where you have a big lattice and every on every edge sits a classical spin variable which somehow interacts in the vertices, this is what people would call a vertex model on a 2D lattice, okay? And to be a bit more precise, so to define a classical model, can you read this? Yes. I have it on the slide. Okay. So to define a classical model, you define your lattice. You say that on every edge lives a spin which can take a finite number of states, in this case 2. And then you have to specify some interaction here. And the identification with the circuit is by saying that the matrix elements of the small unitary gates correspond to the Boltzmann weights of this model. Right, so at each vertex you have four edges and therefore 4 spins, right? So these A, B, C, D. I don't care about the other topics. So you have these 4 guys sitting here, and this is corresponding to the Boltzmann rate of your model. So indeed, I mean, typically, this h is a real function and beta is a positive number, so this whole Boltzmann rate is a positive real number. But since we have here unitary operations, we will just not care about this distinction. Yes. Okay. So the bottom line is, via this simple representation of tensor contractions, we find that such a matrix element coincides with the partition function of a vertex model on a 2D square lattice with some boundary conditions. Yeah, I didn't say that yet. So this x and y, right, so the left and right bra and ket, just corresponds to fixing the configuration of these spins and the configuration of these spins on the right hand side. This is something you can easily see. Okay. So I'm not sure if many people have heard of these vertex models before. I mean, before I did this stuff, I hadn't. So let's just give some examples. So famous vertex models are, for example, the 6 vertex model and the 8 vertex model. So these are models on a 2D lattice, like so. On every edge sits a spin which can take 2 states, like we also had. And then the model is defined typically by looking at all these configurations around the vertex and specifying which of these configurations are forbidden and which are allowed. And a forbidden configuration would correspond to a 0 Boltzmann rate. So the model is specified by putting some zeros here, which say that certain configurations of these weights around the vertex are forbidden. So with the 8 vertex model, you would have only 8 which are allowed out of the 16. And the 6 vertex model, additionally, this and this guy is 0, so only 6 of the configurations are allowed. Okay. So this matrix here, this 4x4 matrix, really correspond to the gates you're doing in the circuit. So if you're restricting to gates which have this structure, then in the transformed picture, you're actually looking at an 8-vertex one. So how can you now use these things? There are two immediate applications which I will talk about. First is to construct simulatable gate sets from exactly solved models. And the second is to obtain quantum algorithms to efficiently approximate certain partition functions. And it's all very simple. So what we've done here is we've written this kind of matrix element as a partition function of a model. So if the corresponding model is a thing which people have looked at in statistical mechanics and which people have solved, well, then you will be able to compute this matrix element. So whenever you have a solvable model or a solved model, you get simulated by the gate set. Okay? So this seems simple enough. Just look in some books and see what people have solved, and then you can write down some simulatable gate sets. And this works to some extent, although one has to be careful about certain points, which I really want to stress, because one may overlook them. So if you look at the type of things people care about in statistical mechanics, and the things we would care about talking about computational complexity, they're not always matched. So for example, in statistical mechanics, people usually just assume translation invariance to a model. This makes things easier, and this is physically relevant. But if you're looking at applying gates to a set of qubits, then you may not want to restrict to this, right? You would like to do a different gate between different qubits, for example. So it may, and this may affect the solvability of the model. Also, physically, a Boltzmann weight is a positive number, and we have here unitary weights somehow. This may also affect the solvability of the model if you're not careful. And third, people typically also care about the thermodynamic limit. We care about finite system size, and also this may affect the complexity, because when taking limits, especially combined with real Boltzmann or with positive Boltzmann weights, there are certain terms which will contribute more, and so you can make certain approximations. So this thermodynamic limit, as compared to finite system size, may also mess up these computational aspects. So I'm not saying they always do, but we should be careful at least. So, but nevertheless, you can just look into some books or papers and just immediately write down some simulatable gate sets from solvable models. Now we'll give an example here. So this 8-vertex model, which I mentioned, has these types of Boltzmann weights. And this is known to be solvable for finite lattices, also for complex weights here, also for non-translation invariant systems, whenever the additional condition which is written here is fulfilled. So this is some quadratic constraint on these Boltzmann weights. This basically says that the determinant of this outer matrix here is the same as the determinant of this inner matrix. And it's known that the solutions, the way to solve such a model, is given by a mapping to free fermions. And if you look at the gates which you get out, then these are in fact corresponding to the gates which Valiant has proven to be simulable some time ago. So this is what they call a match gate. So this result has been somehow proven independently in the context of quantum information theory. And also the connection to free fermions was later somehow rediscovered. So I'm not giving anything new here, but the point is simply that these results, well, they have been around for decades, maybe 30 years or something. So it seemed that well, there is a lot to be learned of such investigations which have already been done. People have already built up some knowledge there, which we may use to our advantage, because it seems that we're asking the same type of problems. Yes?
If you if a model is solvable, that means that you know the partition function or spectrum and so on. But if you have a model that can be mapped to free fermions, you don't know more. I mean, you know kind of everything about the system that is at stake. Would that translate into knowing even more about the gate set that you have in mind, or is that? Is that not conceivable that you?
I mean, in any case, when I say solvable, I mean a very vague thing. So, and also, what filters mean is typically not always clear. So, what I specifically.
Because most filters would say it's solvable if you know the partition function.
Yes, but what does that mean? That's not a clear statement. Because you could mean in the thermodynamic limit, or translation invariant, and so on and so on. So this is a big deal. But it's true that if you're able to map a model to feed fermions, you're able to do to know a lot about it.
Martin, just a quick question. Understand when you write finite dimension, do you mean finite size?
I mean finite lattice size.
Finite lattice size. It's all living on planar graphs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Question?
Yeah. In exactly soluble models, we know that the Boltzmann weights should satisfy the software factor equation.
Yes.
But here, have only.
So this
now
this
one special case, more generally, actually.
Yeah, so this does not use the Einbachs equation. Mm-hmm. The Einbachs equation is a very powerful thing, but we haven't been able to use it yet. So this is, I will come back to this in my open problem slide. But,
okay, yeah, because in that case, we know that the work, if work has model, is also.
Yes,
so
yes.
Which contains the continuous parameter.
Yes, but it's not exactly clear what, how well you can use that. Notional solvability with the Einbachs equation, because this is related to these problems which I mentioned here. So anyway, I guess the only thing I want to argue is that for me this is a bit convincing evidence that tells me it's a good idea to look at the technique which people have developed there, because we seem to be redeveloping ourselves in our business while we could just look at what these people have been doing. So, this is some motivation. So beyond Valiant, people have looked at what is called a 32 vertex model, right? Which is again some kind of vertex model with where certain Boltzmann weights are allowed. Now also triangular lattice, right? So these would correspond to 3-qubit gates, like so, and these are the gates which you get out. And again, with some additional quadratic constraints on these matrix elements. Such model is mapped to free fermions, and you end up with a simulated bucket set. Okay. So next, quantum algorithms. So again, here the argument is very simple. So we're writing this partition function as a matrix element of a unitary circuit, but we know how to approximate these matrix elements efficiently on a quantum computer by just doing the Hadamard test. So what you get if you do the Hadamard test is you get a number C, which is the distance between the number you wanted to compute in the first place is of the order 1 over 4. So this is called an additive approximation of the problem. So by just doing this Hadamard test and making sure that the Boltzmann weights you choose give rise to unitary operations, you get very simple algorithms to compute these partition functions. And somehow you can convince people, hopefully, that these things are not efficiently classically solvable, because you can get BQP complete problems easily as well by just taking for your model, so you take as your model, let me start over. So the Boltzmann weight you choose in your model should correspond to universal gate sets. Then you can make any circuit here, and then the corresponding problem would be BQP complete. And this can be done, for example, with the 6-vertex model, which has this structure. Okay, so a bunch of zeros here, and now it's known that with these type of gates, you can do universal quantum computation because they correspond to the exchange interaction. So this means that computing the partition function of the 6-vertex model on a 2D lattice with these kinds of weights is a big problem. Okay, so I don't know if this sounds all very nice or not, but there are a bunch of negative points about these considerations, namely two of them. The first is that these quantum algorithms, they provide quite a bad approximation, in my opinion, to this partition function. Because if you're not lucky, this partition function may be an exponentially small object, and then a quantum algorithm which gives a 1/Pauli approximation is not really useful. So the approximation is not too good. And second, it seems difficult to get algorithms where you're actually computing physical partition functions, so where you really are looking at positive Boltzmann weights. And this seems to be more or less inherent to the fact that you need unitary operations in your quantum computer. And I don't know yet how to overcome this. And this problem also seems to be present in, for example, the work of Aharonov on the Boltzmann weight. So it's not clear whether you can actually circumvent this problem. But on the positive side, the algorithms, even if they're not useful, they are at least very simple. Okay? So they're simple and general, and it seems to be a systematic way of mapping a model to a useless quantum algorithm. Okay. Okay, that was the first thing. Second mapping will be related to teleportation-based quantum computation. And now, instead of vertex models, something which is known as edge models, which you may be more familiar with, because edge models are simply models like the easing and the false model. So you have a lattice, spins are sitting on the sides, and they interact over an edge. This is what people call edge models. So how is a link with teleportation made? So imagine you have a 2D lattice of 2-qubit states. So each of these guys is a 2-qubit state. May be different in every edge, so just some kind of inhomogeneous network of 2-qubit states. And then we will try to do computation with such a network of states by doing measurements from the left to the right. And in every group of qubits here, we will do a maximally entangled measurement corresponding to a GZ measurement. This GZ state on 4 qubits, and then we complete it until we have the basis. And this is the type of measurement which we will do in every step. And if we allow ourselves to have a certain, you know, class of states sitting there, we will be able to do a certain class of operations yielding certain, you know, unitary evolution in the output here. So with this model of computation, you may ask for which classes of states I can put there, is the corresponding computation simulatable, classically. And there again, the link with statistical mechanics comes in. So we will now consider on the same lattice as we had before. So 2D lattice here, 2D lattice here. And now we will consider what is called an edge model. So spins are sitting on these sides. They have states 0 and 1 because we have qubits. And over every edge, there is an interaction. And we will now make, again, a correspondence via Boltzmann weights. So the Boltzmann weights of our model are defined by the components of these vectors. Okay? So these are the Boltzmann weights of the model somehow. So as compared to the vertex model case, where we had the unitary, the elements of the unitary, which correspond to Boltzmann weights, now we have the coordinates of the states, which correspond to both states. And if you do that, you can figure out that the partition function of such a model is given by an overlap between two things. On the right-hand side is this whole collection of 2-qubit states, so one for every edge. And on the left-hand side is this collection of GHC measurements, so per site. You're putting, so per such site, you're putting one GZ state, just a plus branch, over 4 qubits. And you're making product of these things over all possible sites. Okay. So if you make the overlap between these two states, you get the partition function of an edge model where the Boltzmann weights of the edge model corresponds to the coordinates of these states. And you see here that this kind of thing is related to this GHZ measurement on these two qubit states, right? Because it's somehow related to the probability of getting into the branch of the measurement where you always get the outcome corresponding to the first basis state. Right. So now again, using this relation, we will conclude that certain computations are classically simulable, and also we will get certain quantum arbiters out of this. So the first observation is, well, again, simple. So if you would restrict here to states which correspond to a classical model, which is solvable in the sense that you can compute this partition function efficiently, then you will get out quantum computations where certain aspects can be classically simulated, to put it like this. Now, for example, if you take the classical easing model on a 2D lattice without external field, then this easing model assigns equal energies to spins 0, 0, and 1, 1. Right? So if they both point up or down, then the energy and thus the Boltzmann weight is the same. And if they point in opposite directions, also the energy is the same. So this would mean you're restricting attention to states which have this property. And then you know you can compute the partition function efficiently. But this also means that whenever you're able to do a certain circuit with such measurements on these easing type states, meaning you get out such kind of matrix elements here, you will be able to compute this thing efficiently because it's a partition function. Okay? And then what you can do is try to figure out if you have such states, which gates can you do? So just a matter of playing around with this teleportation. For example, you can do these single qubit gates, and you can do these two qubit gates. And since these things correspond to measurements which correspond to an easing model which you can solve, this means that if you concatenate such operations, the corresponding matrix element of this circuit here can be computed efficiently via this map. So again, you get out in one line simulatable gate sets from solvable models. Okay? But of course, it's also only this kind of matrix element which you can simulate. It doesn't say too much about other aspects.
Unitary? Is one parameter family or just singular points? You get unitary gain there?
Well, this is excitations. And this is Z0 rotation. So
that's a one parameter family in the case of unitary.
In this case, yes. Yes. Okay, so that's so far about simulated located. And again, you can go to quantum algorithms easily because you've written a partition function as a matrix element of a unitary circuit. And now reading it in the other direction, this is something you can do on a quantum computer with a certain approximation. Therefore, as long as you choose your couplings here corresponds to unitary gates here, you're able to approximate these things on a quantum computer efficiently. And again, if you're careful enough to make sure that the model corresponds to some universal gate set, you will be able to get out PQP complete algorithms. So if you work this all out, not giving any details here, but then you can get a quantum algorithm for some easing type model on a 2D square lattice within a magnetic field, which is BQP complete. But again, the couplings for this algorithm are very, very complex. Somehow imaginary temperature. Okay. And all the other pros and cons of the quantum algorithms, which I sketched some slides ago, they're all still here. So from a practical point of view, the usability of these algorithms is questionable.
Oh, thanks.
Okay. Then finally, quickly, I'd like to present the last mapping, which is relating again such easing and Boltz-type models to one-way quantum computation. So we're now the model of computation consists of preparing some entangled resource states, and we only see the cubic measures. Okay? So the idea is now to map a given model to a resource state. Right? So I will show some way how to do that. So imagine that we are looking at an edge model like the EASY model with two-state classical spins on a 2D square lattice. And then I will associate this model to an entangled resource state on a system of qubits where the qubits are living like here. So we have qubits sitting on the edges of the lattice and qubits sitting on the perches of the lattice. So this is the Hilbert space. I now need to define a state on that Hilbert space. And the state is given in terms of some stabilizer relations. So for every vertex, we look at the qubits sitting on that vertex and on the four edge qubits around it, and you place an x operator on these five qubits. And for every edge, you look at the qubits sitting on that edge and the two neighboring vertex qubits, and you place a z operator on that edge. You do this for every, this guy for every vertex, this guy for every edge, then you can show you get a maximal set of commuting Pauli operators. So there is a unique state, which is the fixed point of all these guys simultaneously. And this is a stabilizer state. And this will be our resource state. Okay. So again, you can make the connection to this classical model by looking at this resource state, which is this guy, and taking a proper overlap between this guy and a bunch of product states. So again, in these product states, we will now encode the information about the couplings, the both coordinates. So these alpha AB are single qubit states sitting on the edges. So they're sitting here on the blue guys. And they encode the information about the pairwise interactions. This kind of coupling. The alpha A's are sitting on the vertices here, the red guys. And they contain information about the local external fields, which are sitting in every vertex. And if you make the overlap between this entangled state and these product states, well, you find that you again get the partition function of the EASY model. So some examples. So you can, of course, you can choose whether to switch on or off the magnetic fields. If you put a zero here for H, you basically get a zero plus one state or an X measurement, which transforms this state into a new state, which you project down in that way. So in that sense, whether you have or you don't have a magnetic field present, this yields different resource states. Yes?
This class contains the first Kilyev model.
What?
Kilyev model.
Yes, it does. So, for example, if you look at a 1D EASY model with, on a chain, right, if you don't have any field there, the resulting state is just a product state, which is trivial. And if you do have a field, you have a 1D cluster state, which is a bit less trivial. Well, let's skip this one and go to 2D. If you have a 2D EASY model without external field, then the resulting state is the toric code state, which is the tariff state. And if you do have a field there, you have a 2D cluster state. Okay? So this is just something which rolls out of these mappings. And then one can again ask all these questions as I asked before. For example, if you have a solvable model, does this give rise to simulatable resource state? Well, with this mapping, again, you see that whenever you can compute the partition function of such a model efficiently, you can compute these overlaps between the entangled resource state and these single qubit states efficiently. And these are somehow the things which you would like to know if you're trying to simulate the measurement process on these resource states. So if you can compute these things efficiently, you can solve to a large extent, you can simulate to a large extent one-way quantum computation on such resource states. And this is the argument, for example, which is used to show that measurement-based quantum computation on the toric code states can be efficiently simulatable classically. So this was work by Dravin and Rosner. And there are a number of parallels which you can draw. For example, if you have the easing model on a 1D chain, even with an external field, this is a solvable model. And this corresponds to 1D cluster state, which we know is simulatable. But you could also conclude that this 1D cluster state is simulatable from this solvability of the easing model. On the other hand, if you would have a 2D lattice without field, you get the planar code state. Like I said, it's simulatable. But if you switch on the field, then simulation of this classical model is empty-hard. And somehow, not surprisingly, we get 2D cluster state, which we know is universal. So these parallels, I think, they are consistent at least, but they may also teach us something about this, you know, power of measurement-based quantum computing in general. Okay. I think I will skip to the conclusions. So what we are trying to do is to establish mappings from quantum computation to statistical mechanics, which are as simple as possible, but which may tell you something about computational power of quantum computing. So, yes?
In the last, I mean, when you have planar, the planarizing model with magnetic field, does the correspondence tell you anything about, you know, BQPR, I mean, polynomial time quantum algorithms being able to simulate that model with, you know, such and such guarantee? I mean, what's the correspondence? What does the correspondence give you computationally?
Well, I mean, this goes back to the second mapping where we have this quantum algorithm to obtain the easing partition function, but the approximation is really bad. So,
well, what's the approximation?
Well, it is this one of the holy thing, mm-hmm. meaning that for sure you're not able to solve an NPR problem. Well, not for sure.
And so what's the normalizing factor for this, you know, your inner product? I mean, meaning, so in your formalism, the partition function is actually a number between 0 and 1.
Yes.
Right? I mean, normally it's actually, I mean, in the standard language, it will be some huge number.
Yes.
So what's the normalizing factor there?
It's, well, I guess it's the time you have to just make sure that the gates you're doing are unitary, and then you end up with a number between 0 and 1. So you'll normalize them both one ways in such a way that the corresponding gate is a unitary gate. And this gives you this normalization. I don't think it's just a simple 1 over 2 to the n or something. Okay. I'm not sure. So anyway, just to conclude, so in general, I see that there is some, you know, very general way of mapping solvable models to simulatable quantum computers, be it quantum circuits or teleportation or one-way quantum computation. And also it seems to lead to an easy way to get quantum algorithms for partition functions with a certain approximation and in a certain parameter regime. And the main challenges would be to understand how you can use the Young-Baxter equation, I would say. So the Young-Baxter equation is this very elaborate scheme, theory, formalism, whatsoever, which allows you to solve vertex models in certain parameter regimes. But when such people mean that they have solved this, that sometimes means different things than the things which we would like to know. For example, this aspect of translation invariance, finite system size compared to thermodynamic limits, and the positive Boltzmann rates, they all play quite an important role here in these solutions. So it's not clear how to translate them into things which we want to do here. So this would be, I think, a challenge. Then also, second, it would be very nice to have some quantum algorithms which can at least treat certain problems in a real physical parameter regime. So I don't have any idea how to do this yet either. And maybe, yeah, so the relation to existing quantum algorithms may teach us something about how these things are related to each other. And then there, most importantly, there is a simulable question. Yeah, thank you.
Well, I don't know. Why is that work?
Yes, we can discuss it. I don't know. Okay, thanks.
Question here, yeah. Yeah. Talking about the mapping, which is very interesting. But however, we know that it is exactly solemn. Some of the models, there may be phase transition because the quantum transition has to be zero, meaning the ground state of the system. Or this is the partition function, the qualitative property of the partition functions depends on the value or the range of physical parameters. So here, we'll have some physical parameters which can be adjust to trigger or to drive quantum phase transitions or not?
I mean, I guess I don't.
Once you have the Boltzmann weight, for example, if you consider the Ising models in external field, okay, we know that with field and without field, the phase of the main body system is different in the sense that
yes, but
the thermodynamic behavior of the system actually is qualitatively different. So
yes.
I want to know what is the reflection of the difference in the quantum logarithm?
Yes, I don't know, I guess, but what I don't get either is how, so these phase transitions, they pop up in physical situations where you have like uniform coupling and then one magnetic field. I mean, this is what human and then you see the changing. But here, when everything is so inhomogeneous, I'm not sure how well you can actually see those things. I just don't know. But yeah, this is asked a lot further. These physical things like phase transitions pop up naturally here, but I guess I don't know.
You mentioned 8 vertex models and 32 vertex models and compare them to quantum circuits using 2-qubit gates and 3-qubit gates.
Yes.
Are there interesting models that have numbers of vertices, you know, inputs and outputs that are between, you know, that aren't just 8 or 32, but somewhere in between that might correspond to qubit circuits that might not just have qubits involved, maybe 2 qubits, where the D is not 2?
Well, I mean, these mappings to free fermions, they are always not two-state classical models, and hence would refer to qubits.
Mm-hmm.
When you and you see that the two main ways of solving those is either free fermions or the Einbeck equation.
Mm-hmm.
The Einbeck equation have the Nernst equation, so maybe there is something there. But in the free fermion case, I would guess.
In the Young-Bradska equation, there is a notion of topology for quantum mobility. Can you put this concept in your frame?
Well, I mean, what you can do is, so there are well-known ways of representing a knot in an as a partition function of some classical model. So you would look at the knot projected on the plane, and then look at some classical model on that corresponding lattice or graph. And then this formalism would give you ways of incorporating this. I'm not sure how the Einbeck equation plays a role there.
Yes, if you were you would find it.
So the Einbeck equation just determines that the partition function which you get is actually the knot invariant. This is my understanding. So
if I understand well these type of models, there is some exchanges between the qubits. They can play a role. is the onions.
Yeah, I don't know how onions work.
Very simple thing.
In your simulated model, quantum computers, you mean that in the circuit model, you mean simulatable with respect to certain product inputs?
Yes.
So if you have a model that in the statistical mechanics picture gives rise to a free fermionic model, could that be that you would also get simulatability with respect to certain non-product inputs? Because certain like internal inputs that would correspond then to fermionic internal states. Is that really
possible? Possibly. I guess the best thing to look at is this value gate. Can one simulate internal inputs with the value gates?
In some cases. Yeah, I'll say.
Okay.
So if there are no further questions,
please. just quick, so there's either 8 non-zero entries for that example or 32. Is nothing else interesting, or is that what people found? I mean, what about 9 non-zero entries or in some certain formation? Is there any work to do, or are all those going to be MP or BQ?
I have no idea. I mean, so what I have found browsing into the literature about these free fermion models, this is the 8 vertex, this 32 vertex, and then some models in higher dimensions. We will not start with a chain of qubits, but with a plane of qubits, and then do something there. But it doesn't seem to be an easy problem to come up with some of the models, I mean, apparently.
Okay.
So that's the main 3 examples that I know.
Okay, so if there are no further questions, let us thank Martin.